Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, IndyCar is back in Phoenix, and we had a great time out at the racetrack, so we'll talk a lot about IndyCar today. Formula One launching, and they were in Australia. We'll talk a little bit about the new car and some of the growing pains they're having with that, as well as Cadillac's entry in their first Formula One race as a manufacturer and a team. We're going to talk a little bit about an old Volvo 240 that has caught the eyes of the guys from Hemmings. We'll also catch you up on what's going on with gas prices. Oh my gosh, have gas prices gone crazy? They are way, way up. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. We'll talk a little IndyCar news from last weekend, where IndyCar was down in St. Petersburg, and the headline reads, New Year, Same Polo Perfection at St. Petersburg. Well, it was the first race of the 2026 IndyCar season, but it felt like a continuation of last year's championship run, as Chip Ganassi Racing's Alex Polo covered the field, Polo cleared pole sitter Scott McLaughlin from Team Penske by 12.4 seconds at the checkered flag and 12.9 seconds over third place Christian Lundgaard. McLaughlin had led a good portion of the race, but Polo was just too much, and this is an example of what is a little bit more of the same thing from year to year. So Alex Polo, again, dominant down in St. Petersburg last weekend, taking the victory. Scott McLaughlin in second, Christian Lundgaard in third, Kyle Kirkwood in fourth, Pato O'Ward finishes in fifth position. The big bummer of the day, Mick Schumacher making his debut for Ray Hall Letterman Racing and crashes on the warm-up lap. So first crash, first guy out, and so hopefully he'll have a little bit better of a run down in Phoenix. And we're going to talk about that next. So Mick Schumacher, who is the son of seven-time Formula One champion Michael Schumacher, his first career oval start ever in his career, because Formula One doesn't race on ovals. And the headline reads, Schumacher shines in first career oval qualifying session. Well, Mick Schumacher was the first IndyCar driver to make a qualifying run on Friday afternoon at Phoenix Raceway and impressed with a 173.667 mile average during his first oval qualifying of his career. Schumacher didn't know where this would leave the number 47 Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing Honda amongst the 25 entries for Saturday's Goodwrencher 250, but watching with a smile after 11 drivers made their run, and Schumacher sat in second behind his teammate Graham Rahal, who eventually moved into first, and then throughout 15 runs, Schumacher held on, but then the eventual pole winner was David Malukas. Once it was over, Schumacher was locked in into the fourth ahead of IndyCar stars Alex Palou, Alexander Rossi, Marcus Ericsson. So it was a pretty exciting day to see this young man get a really strong, strong qualification position in his first oval, and hopefully he'll have a good race. Maybe not as good as hopeful, but we'll see. Well, it's a new season, and we have different cars and different stars on different teams. And the headline reads, Malukas takes first career IndyCar pull at Phoenix. Well, David Malukas will lead the NTT IndyCar field to the green on Saturday for the running of the Good Racers 250 at Phoenix International Raceway, while the man he replaced at Team Penske, Will Power, will start from the back after hitting the wall during qualifications. Malukas was the first driver to break into the 175 barrier in an opening lap of 175.6 and backed it up with another lap of over 175. The pole marks David Malukas's first one in his 45-race IndyCar career. Pato O'Ward looked like he might join Malukas on the front row when he produced a 174.7 in the opening lap, but went into the 171s on his next one, consigning him to the number five position, starting in the number five car, starting in seventh. Yes, and Will Power, yeah, he crashed. This is now the second weekend where he's crashed his race car. He crashed twice down in St. Petersburg, crashed in the qualifications, as well as he crashed during the race itself. So the starting field for the running of the race, Malukas in first, Newgarden starting in second. These are both Team Penske cars. Graham Rahal in third. And Mick Schumacher, as I mentioned, starting in fourth and rounding out the top five was Alexander Rossi. A couple cars to think about. Alexander Rossi starting in sixth. Pretty good start for Stingray Robb, who is a perennial backmarker, starting in 12th. And surprisingly, you've got Felix Rosenquist, who crashed as well in practice and qualifications, and Will Power, two strong veterans with a lot of wins starting at the back of the field. Well, the headline reads, IndyCar puts on a Phoenix race to celebrate after 8 years away. Well, having been here for the last stint at Phoenix Raceway in 2016 through 18, it looked like there were more fans in the grandstands today for the Good Ranchers 250, the opener of the first NASCAR IndyCar crossover on an oval, than there were the last three times IndyCar visited the track combined. Well, leaving the race in 2026, an overwhelming memory will be an instant classic produced by IndyCar drivers new and old. The crowd witnessed one heck of a show with more than 500 passes that were recorded during the 250-lap race around an oval that helped make IndyCar famous back in the 1960s. Penske dominated early, then ECR, then Global Andretti, but at the end, Joseph Newgarden came back around and snookered the field with a strong move to take another fresh set of Firestone tires to try to chase down the leaders who stayed out during the last caution flag, and it worked. The two-time Indy 500 winner ripped past Andretti's Kyle Kirkwood with just eight laps to go. It was a gamble, and Newgarden was surprised as anyone after capturing his 33rd victory of his career. Frankly, I didn't think we were going to win today, to be honest. His surprise was matched by many drivers who privately feared the series would return to Phoenix after 8 years and it would be a pass-free snoozer. Well, in the end, proved IndyCar that the unique power, downforce package it chose for the first time back at a track in nearly a decade, the tire compound developed by Firestone was just what the drivers needed to make a statement for open-wheel racing in front of a primarily stock car crowd. I think it's a great opportunity we have to race here today, Newgarden said. I'd really hope we'd have a good show. I think we produced what we should expect from an IndyCar series race. I hope there was a lot of people who have may not seen an IndyCar race in a while that go away from here saying, I should give this another look. Kyle Kirkwood finished in second after a day after leading 47 laps in his Andretti Global entry and had nothing but praise for the work by IndyCar and Firestone. Quote, honestly, why would you change a thing? He said. The racing was phenomenal. Yeah, I think coming back here, I wouldn't change a single thing. Now, prior to the start, an IndyCar official told Racer magazine that the series had been asked to return in 2027, which seems more warranted after the pass for happy race and a last-minute lead change authored by Newgarden made the race a huge hit for those who were at the venue. Well, I think we should both compliment each other, Newgarden said, wanting more crossovers with NASCAR. If you're a motorsports fan, you're getting more value for your weekend. You have two top-notch motorsports championships all on the same weekend. Why wouldn't you want to see more of this? I think it's good for everybody. For the new championship leader who won the last Phoenix race in 2018, a hearty welcome and positive response from the fans only added to his achievement. Very fun to see the crowd. Everyone seemed open and welcoming in a good way. I saw motorsports fans here this weekend, excited to watch racing. We put on a good show, and I hope the Cup guys put on a good show tomorrow. And let's see if we can do more of this in the future. And as someone who was at the race, I totally agree. I had friends fly in from California, Texas, Indiana, and everybody to a person was like, wow, that was a great race. And after suffering through those races in 2016, 17, and 18, which were not good races, they were pretty boring. It was just follow the leader. I'm very excited, and I'm glad to see that Phoenix Raceway will be bringing back the IndyCars for next year. Well, from the pages of Hemmings magazine, this article is called The Second Time Around. I was out in the garage the other day rummaging through a box of specialized tools that I hardly ever use, and I found this object that I just couldn't place. It was a hefty thing, kind of a bent metal arm stuck to a metal semicircle with three tabs sticking out of it. It was beautifully made, and it still looked brand new, shiny and black. scratched my head, as I often do, and I thought, huh, what is this? What did I buy this for? Well, that has been long forgotten in my garage. Well, a few days later, I was scrolling through an automotive repair site, and I found the answer to the riddle. Of course, it was the tool that I needed to hold the crank pulley of the Volvo red block engine that I placed while removing the pulley bolt. I must have bought it when I was putting a new timing chain on our old Volvo 940 turbo wagon. And I probably got a second use out of it when I was doing the same job on the Volvo 780 Baritone Coupe. Both of those cars, yeah, they're long gone. But I'm still glad I have this tool, because it's probably going to come in very handy on a new project car that arrived in my garage a couple days ago, a 1990 Volvo 240 DL sedan. Yes, once more, I've fallen down the rear-wheel drive Volvo rabbit hole. But I couldn't help myself. What am I supposed to do when I'm offered a sell price right in the town where I live and a realistic asking price and just needs a little wrenching to put it back in daily driver condition? Well, this is the car that's gotten me out of semi-retirement as an amateur Volvo mechanic, and worth every penny that I paid. It isn't just another project car. This is a 240 repeat, an echo of the green 240 four-door that my wife and I owned when we were early in our marriage. Now, I've owned many cars over these years, and some have been repeats. I've had a pair of Spitfires, which I bought while I was in high school, a brace of Saab 900s, one a hatchback, the other a convertible, and that's part of the been there, done that as I scroll through the classified ads and tell myself, what's good for my brain is to learn some new things and get some new experiences. Variety is the spice of life, right? So why did I go back to the Volvo 240? Well, the analytical side of my brain says it's a practical choice, one that makes a lot of sense, and I hardly have to learn anything new. I've become familiar with the ways things are done back in Gothenburg, which will help flatten out the learning curve, right? Yeah, I can learn a lot. I can use a lot more flattening out on many things. All right, now the emotional side of my brain says this Volvo is like an old boot, one that's comfortable. It's comfort food. It's the automotive equivalent of a big serving of mac and cheese. Nothing fancy here, nothing but your basic automotive ingredients stirred together and baked in a big square cake. Well, I've come to eat those words many times so far. Working on this car has been like therapy, only without questioning anything that happened in my childhood. Diagnosing the car's problems and shopping for parts has been strolling down memory lane. Hey there, IPD. Long time no see of VP Auto Parts. Well, I've been surprised at how many online communities have changed since the last time I visited these formerly busy sites. Some had gone dark. Others emerged to pick up the slack. It's a kick to see so many YouTube channels created by people younger than me who want to share how they've fixed and modified, and enjoyed their Volvo 240s. There's even a whole subculture of people who drag these moss-covered Volvos out of the woods and make them roadworthy again. It's kind of inspiring. Now, there's one other good reason for the 240. It's a car of our time. It's sturdy, it's dignified, and it's safe. Well, at least in its stock form, it shrugs off that obsessed world of going faster and showing that studied indifference to the tailgater from the tailgater to the crossover. Although the visibility is excellent, it remains a fortress built to shield its occupants from all the bad things that can happen out there on the road. And Volvo values its lines. It's old school. Besides, I still own that old crank pulley, and I think I probably am going to need to use it again. Well, last weekend, NASCAR Cup was down in Texas at Circuit de America, and the headline reads, Reddick makes NASCAR history at COTA with his third straight win to open the season. Well, Tyler Reddick put a new page in the NASCAR history book last Sunday at the Circuit de America with his third consecutive victory to start the season. Reddick is the first driver to accomplish that. The 23-11 race driver started from the pole and led a race-high 58 laps of 95. In the final stages, he held off the best road racer in the business, Shane Van Ginsburg. Now, this means the world to me, Reddick said, and it's so fitting. going out there and I'm leading, and then SVG, the guy who we've all been trying to beat for a while now, and to be able to outlast him and hold him off for the win, it's incredible. I'm really proud of our Toyota Camry and everyone at 2311 Racing. We worked really hard, and we're going to work on these road courses, and this is just one race, but it was important to me, and it was fitting to get three in a row here and make history. Well, Reddick and his number 45 team started the season with a last lap winning pass at Daytona 500 before dominating the next race at Echo Park Speedway a week later. And COTA is the first track that he ever won at in his career. Now he's won it twice in his racing career. Well, Shane Van Ginsburg was nearly 4 seconds behind Reddick at the checkered flag. And was pretty impressive to watch this young man just work through the field. And he had some good competition. Shane Van Ginsburg was right there. His teammate, Christopher Bell, on another Toyota driver, finished in third. Ty Gibbs finished in fourth. And Arizona native from Glendale, Arizona, Michael McDowell, finished in fifth. Well, NASCAR was qualifying yesterday prior to the IndyCar race, and the headline reads, Logano edges out Larson for Phoenix Cup pole. Well, Joey Logano will lead the NASCAR Cup Series to the green flag today at Phoenix Raceway. Logano won the pole at a speed of 135.5 miles per hour. Now, what's interesting, folks, is that the IndyCars were qualifying 40 miles an hour faster. They qualified at 175 on its pole. According to Logano, obviously, it's a good thing for qualifying, he said, for his third pole at Phoenix and the 34th of his career. I thought we were pretty good on the long run, too, especially it's a special weekend for Team Penske. We are celebrating our 60th anniversary, and we've got Scott McLaughlin's Bathurst 1000 paint scheme, so it looks pretty cool. So Kyle Larson qualified in second, and will join Joey Logano on the front row. Austin Cindric, another Penske driver, will start in third. Daniel Suarez will start in fourth. That's a great starting position for the Spire guys. And Ryan Blaney will start in fifth. That puts all three of the Penske cars in the top six. So we'll see if Penske can pull off the double, winning the Cup race. They won the IndyCar race yesterday, and I'll have those results for you next weekend. And the race is on today. I believe it starts at 12:30, and that is on Fox Sports 1. Well, Formula 1 kicked off their championship yesterday down in Australia. I was actually on last night here, and George Russell and Kimi Antonelli finished first and seconds with Mercedes, and they have been the preseason favorite based off of the testing. Charles Leclerc finished in third, and Lewis Hamilton in fourth. So we go Mercedes, Ferrari, and then in fifth, last year's champion, Lando Norris. Yeah, very interesting. A lot of people talking about the fact that the drivers do not like what is happening with the new power unit and the new design of the car. We had one of the Audi cars not even make the race, pulled off the grid. And then Oscar Piastri, who drives for McLaren and finished third in the championship last year, actually crashed out on the pace lap with an issue with the new power unit. So a lot of turmoil in the first Formula One race of the season. And also what's interesting this year, where in the past the races had been available on ESPN, Apple now has bought the rights to Formula One. So the only way you can see the Formula One race live is to have an Apple TV subscription. And I myself right now am holding off trying to do that. There's a lot of other racing out there. We'll see. But right now I'm holding off on my Apple's subscription. We'll see if I can make it the entire season. Wish me luck. Also kicking off their season is the NHRA Drag Racing Group. And they are down in Florida for the Gator Nationals in Gainesville. But guess what? They'll be right here out at Firebird Motorsports Park March 20th through the 22nd. So if you've never been to a Top Fuel drag race or a big drag racing event, you might want to think about getting some tickets. You can go to the Firebird Motorsports Park website and check more of that out, or you can go on to the NHRA.com. So I'll have the results for today's running of the Gator Nationals, and then mark your calendar March 20th through the 22nd, drag racing out at Firebird Motorsports Park in Chandler. Well, let's talk about gas prices, and man, do we have a lot to talk about. And this is from the website The Hill. These U.S. metros saw the greatest spike in gas prices this week. Well, gas prices have continued to skyrocket this week as the war in Iran has created havoc in the oil sector, but a handful of U.S. cities saw a larger than average increase. Now, oil prices have surged, with the Brent crude up nearly $70 late last week. The war has expanded, including several critical areas of production and movement of oil and gas through the Middle East. Much of that will depend on what happens off the Straits of Hormuz, off the Iran coast, where roughly a fifth of the oil of the world typically sails through. On Friday afternoon, a price for a barrel of Brent crude in the international standard leaped another 8.5% to settle at $92.67. It briefly rose to $94, which will be its highest level since September of 2023. Now, in the U.S., the national gas average jumped from $2.98 of regular gasoline to $3.32, according to AAA. Price increases were painful. They were talking at the folks at Gas Buddy. Right now, the biggest price jumps in the country, number one was Laredo, Texas. The gas went up 72 cents a gallon in just 1 week. Cincinnati, Ohio, 64 cents. Fort Wayne, Indiana, 64 cents. Winchester, Virginia, 64 cents. Dayton, Ohio, 63 cents. Corpus Christi, Texas, 57, and Springfield, Ohio, 56. Now, the folks over at Gas Buddy said they told Nexstar there's no uniform price increase in the short term, but gas stations across the country will ultimately be affected. Some states go faster, some states go slower. I think everyone will feel a little bit of an increase. It's going to be a little bit like a marathon. Everyone's going to have to get to the same destination, but it's going to be a little haphazard at how many stations are trying to raise prices, and it varies in every state. Well, as of Thursday, the 10 most expensive states for gas were California at $4.81, Washington at $4.44, Hawaii $4.43, Oregon $4.04, Nevada $3.87, Alaska $3.72, Arizona $3.58, Illinois $3.36, Pennsylvania $3.35, and Michigan at $3.27. The least expensive places, well, that was Oklahoma at $2.79, Mississippi at $2.81, Kansas at $2.83, Tennessee at $2.84, and Texas checking in at $2.87. Now, the U.S. government gave details about Friday about the president's plan announced earlier to offer insurance to ships who cross the straits, but that had a little effect on the market. If oil prices continue to spike to like $100 a barrel, well, some analysts say it's going to be too much for the global economy to withstand. Wow. Yeah, gas prices are gone just crazy. I was driving down the road. I ended up buying some $3.69 gas at Costco yesterday, but I saw lots of gas stations driving around town on the way out to the racetrack at $4.15 to even $4.25. All right, well, let's take a little local look at what's going on here in Arizona. Let's talk gas prices for the state of Arizona right now. The River Island market in Parker at $2.89, Yuma at $2.89 at the 76 station, Sam's Club in Tucson at $2.89, and the Speedway in Benson at $2.89 as well. All right, let's talk about what's going on here in Metro Phoenix with our gas prices. Well, no more gas under $3 a gallon here in the Metro Phoenix area. Right now, least expensive gas is at the Circle K cash payment only, and that's at Chandler Boulevard, and that's $3.09. The Marathon station on Southern Avenue at $3.17. The 76 station on Central Avenue at $3.39. Several Sam's Clubs around town at $3.44. The Fry's in Chandler Boulevard in Ahwatukee at $3.49. The Walmart fuel station at 35th Avenue in Phoenix is at $3.49, and the Marathon station on Osborne and 19th Avenue at $3.49 as well. So gas prices have skyrocketed here in Metro Phoenix, and this is not going to get better anytime soon, I'm sorry to say. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I have a 2007 Audi A4 Quattro with 90,000 miles. It's seeming to lose power on acceleration, and black smoke comes out of the exhaust pipe. The check engine light is on. Is this the turbocharger? And that's from Michelle. Well, could be, but I hope not. Black smoke is usually present when a car's mixture is too rich, too much fuel, not enough air. So if black smoke you're seeing, you're right, your turbo may have failed. If the turbo isn't working, the engine management system is still expecting the turbo to force air into the cylinders. As such, it would add more fuel when you accelerate. When that air doesn't show up, the fuel goes unburned and the engine floods, the acceleration bogs down, and the unburned fuel comes out of the tailpipe as black soot. A fuel-rich condition can be caused by other things. One of your fuel injectors is leaking and pouring too much fuel into your cylinders, which could be as bad and worse under hard acceleration and would cause the black smoke and poor performance. It could be something relatively simple, like a bad spark plug, or a weak coil, or a bad sensor, or even a filthy air cleaner. These things could, air filter. These things could cause a fuel-rich condition, and each one of these would be relatively easy to fix. They don't require an owner-rich condition. Now, there's also a possibility that the smoke looks black, but it's actually bluish gray, which means you could be burning oil. Now, that's at least as bad, if not worse, and that points to many internal failures of the turbo or other serious breach of etiquette of the oil etiquette style. So I would get out your Benjamin Moore color chart and see if the smoke is more like wrought iron black or Van Duse blue. Even better, take your car to your mechanic and ask him to scan it. When the check engine light comes on, your computer stores the code that tells your mechanic why the light came on. The detail provided by these scans, well, they vary from manufacturer to manufacturer. But even if it doesn't provide the precise answer, and sometimes it doesn't, it will give your mechanic an enormous hint of where to go. If it is the turbo, you're talking several thousands of dollars to repair that, Michelle. And in that case, you might want to think long and hard. I would also get a stem-to-stern inspection of all your car's components before dropping that kind of money on a 19-year-old Audi. Yeah, 90,000 miles is not bad, but the reality is the car is almost 20 years old, and turbos do fail. I've had several turbo cars in my life. I've put turbos in my Mustangs before, and it is not an inexpensive process. And certainly with an older car, you really want to know what else is out there before you spend that kind of money to repair it. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.